AM 1290 and 95.7 FM. News Talk Radio WHIO and Sim Trainer Indoor Range and Firearms Training Center present Shooting from the Hip. Straight talk about firearms, ammunition, self-defense, when and where you can carry, legislation, and legal issues. All about safety, training, and so much more. Your hosts are Jeff Pedro and Mark Avery. Jeff is a 24-year veteran police officer, currently assigned City of Kettering Detective, and owner and lead instructor at Sim Trainer. Mark is a retired Air Force officer, senior staff instructor at Sim Trainer, and NRA certified instructor in multiple disciplines. They're here to bring to the microphone the truth about guns. Join them by calling 457-1290. Now, Shooting from the Hip. On AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM. News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Good afternoon. I want to welcome our listeners to this broadcast of Shooting from the Hip, brought to you by Sim Trainer, the Dayton area's first indoor shooting range and firearms training center. You can come see us at 2031 2031 Dryden Road in Moraine. If you care to stop by the shop and see what we have to offer, or you can visit us on the web at www.sim-trainer.com, or you could call us at 937-293-3914 and see if we can help you with any of your needs as far as the shooting sports or firearms training, anything of that nature goes. A couple things I want to alert you to this week. This is a big week because this is what they call Dayton Liberty Week, or the Liberty Week. They're having a big activity at the Wright State University Nutter Center. They're going to have a Freedom Rally, and it's a big event. One of the guest speakers is Alan Keyes, and they have a number of other speakers that are going to be present. But I want to let you know that that event is going again be at the Nutter Center on Tuesday, April 13th. It begins at 4 o'clock with some pre-event activities for families, and then progresses on through. At 5 o'clock, they're going to have some additional events, and then the guest speakers are actually going to begin at 7 p.m. You must purchase a ticket. In order to get a ticket, I want to encourage you to go to the website is DaytonLibertyWeek.com, DaytonLibertyWeek.com, and you can get some tickets or make arrangements to get some tickets. We have a couple left at Sim Trainer, and if you call down at 293-3914 and leave your name and a contact phone number, I'll make sure that we leave them there for you to pick up either tomorrow or on Monday. I only have a handful left because we've been giving them out to members on a regular basis over the last week or so. But I'm going to encourage you to take the opportunity to participate in that event. It's going to be a kind of a send-off for the upcoming political season that's starting to heat up here in the Dayton area, and it promises to be a pretty fun event. And for those who have the interest in the conservative attitude, I think that they're going to have some pretty good opportunities for you to voice your opinion and be part of that exciting event. Mark, do you have any comments on that either way? Or?
Yeah, some of the guest speakers that are going to be at the event, the keynote speaker is Alan Keyes. Most of the people may be familiar with him. He's probably one of the most talked about African-American conservatives in the past several decades. He ran as for presidential nomination in the 2008 election, so there's probably some folks that still remember that having gone on. He's also a well-known personality in the political scenario in other ways. So it'll be interesting to hear him speak. There are several other guest speakers and entertainers who will be there as well, and bringing different parts of the message throughout the evening. So I'm looking forward to it. It'll be a good time.
Yeah, just another thing to remind our listeners about. If you remember, there are a bunch of the detractors who are saying that these Tea Party movements are nothing but it's kind of a fringe movement. Well, I'm telling you, they're expecting between 8,000 and 10,000 people at this event, and there's events going on around the country. There's a big one going on down in Cincinnati the same week. I think Oliver North is going to be the keynote speaker down there, and they got some great things going on. It's beyond grassroots at this point. It's progressing. It's really picking up momentum, and as I said back in January on our first show of the year, 2010 is going to be a landmark year. There's going to be changes. You have an opportunity to make a difference, and participation in these kinds of events is just one of the ways you can get yourself geared up to what's going to happen November 2nd. So I encourage you to attend. Dayton Liberty Week activities.
And, you know, it really doesn't matter what your own political perspective is, whether you come from the left or the right or the Republicans or Democrats or Libertarians. It really isn't. That's not so much a question as it is being involved, being aware of the issues, finding out what the different candidates believe, and supporting the ones that agree with the concepts that you believe. We're pretty solidly patriots in terms of understanding what the Constitution says and believing that the Constitution is the highest law in the land. And then if there's anything that conflicts with what the Constitution says, we need to fix that. But not everybody understands things that same way. And although we might disagree on some of those things, being involved is by far the most critical aspect. I obviously believe very strongly in one way, but there's a lot of other people that have very strong beliefs as well. And the fact that we as American citizens can participate in the process and ensure that the liberties that we value are represented accurately, that we are represented accurately in Congress and in the and also in the state legislature, as well as in the other positions of leadership, I think that's what's critical. That's what sets this country apart from so many others.
And I just want to add to that the fact that several events that have occurred over the last 6 months to a year in this country, the election in Massachusetts and then a couple of major decisions that have been handed down in defense of our Second Amendment rights are directly attributable to the individuals who spoke up, got a hold of their lawmakers, got involved in the process, and actually made a difference. And you will continue to make a difference throughout the year, but you got to participate, and we want to encourage you to come out and be part of that. I want to take the time now to discuss a little bit about 2 weeks ago, a caller called in about an incident that occurred in the city of Kettering whereby he was cited for failing to identify himself as a concealed carry permit holder when he was in the company of police officers. And what happened in that particular incident, there was a disturbance at an apartment complex, and the police were called legitimately to come to the complex and to get to intervene, to try to mediate the dispute. Well, they arrived on the scene. They started to talk to the two people, including the one individual who ultimately got cited, and he never notified them that he was a concealed carry permit holder. And the conversation went on for several minutes, and one of the officers on the scene had to bring to his attention that he was a concealed carry permit holder, and he made a comment something to the effect of, well, that's irrelevant to the situation, when in fact it was relevant to the situation, because as those of you that have your license to carry know, you're required by law to identify yourself as a concealed carry permit holder if and when you are carrying in the presence of a law enforcement officer, whether that's in the situation where police happen onto a call where you just happen to be on the premises, or if you're stopped in a motor vehicle, the law requires that you identify. And I want to explain something that's so critical just so people understand where we're coming from. Naturally, I'm a police officer, so I have one perspective, but I want you to understand this and understand this very clearly. When a police officer arrives on the scene of a disturbance, we're naturally officer safety conscious. And that being the case, we have to watch out for our safety and the safety of those of the people we're vested with the responsibility to protect. Well, if we happen to see an individual that hasn't notified us, has a gun, maybe the imprint through his shirt, or he leans one way or the other, we see the gun, what we're instantly going to do is draw our gun, point it at the individual, advise them to get down on the ground, let us see their hands, and we're going to handcuff them, take them into custody, at least temporarily, until we can sort through the situation, and then it's going to be an inconvenience. So that the law, the way it is right now, is a good law, because officers that respond to rapidly evolving, tense, stressful, potentially dangerous situations have to have that little bit of latitude of knowing ahead of time. Now, there's always the case that we're not going to know the bad guy because he's not going to tell us. But the thing is, the same thing's going to happen to the bad guy, and we just had it happen not too long ago where a bad guy had a gun and he got the same treatment. He got put down on the ground, hands out to the side, officers came in, secured him, secured the firearm, and he was ultimately taken to jail. But I just want you to know that officers on the scene don't know the facts when they go to disturbances, and that's why those kinds of things happen.
Yeah, let me add just a little bit of the civilian perspective to it, because I'm not a police officer. And I know there's several people that feel like it's some sort of an imposition that they would have to provide that notification because it's their right to keep and bear arms. And, you know, there's a sense in which that's true. But what Jeff just described is pretty important. And that is that as a police officer, when they come up on a scene, there's a whole lot of unknowns. And that is a very dangerous situation for them as well as for the bystanders. if there's someone there who has evil intent and is using or carrying a firearm and has intent of doing something evil with it, maybe not right then, but that's their general reason for carrying a firearm, that's a problem. And those people are not going to have a license to carry a concealed handgun. And when somebody who does have a license provides notice that says, I have a license to carry a concealed handgun, I have my handgun with me, and then gives the officer the opportunity to say what they want you to do with that, for the most part, the officers are not going to try to take the firearm from you. They're recognizing that it's the good guys that carry the firearms and provide that notice, and then there won't be any surprises. The worst thing that can happen in a situation like that is a surprise. And what Jeff just described is a very appropriate way for the police to deal with a situation where they have discovered that someone has a gun and they haven't provided any kind of notification, because the good guys are going to tell the cops and the bad guys are not. So if you didn't tell the cops, that puts you in the bad guy category until things get sorted out. Let's take a break here. We're at our first break. And so when we come back, we'll talk to KW in Dayton, who has a question about concealed carry license. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Hi, this is Rachel Parsons, spokesperson for the National Rifle Association, and you're on Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.
I want to welcome our listeners to this broadcast of Shooting from the Hip, brought to you by Sim Trainer, the Dayton area's first indoor shooting range and firearms training center. And I want to encourage you, if you have any interest in taking your concealed carry class or some basic firearms training or just some recreational shooting, stop by and see us at 2031 Dryden Road in Moraine. You can visit us on the web at sim-trainer.com, or you can call us at 937-293-3914. I also want to encourage our listeners, if you have any concerns, questions you might have today about any firearms-related issue, to give us a call at 457-1290, and we'll be glad to get you on the air. Before going to a couple of the calls, I also want to make mention of a fact. We were talking before the break about police intervention with civilians. One of our members down at the range was telling us a story. He was on vacation over spring break in the last week or two, and he had the unfortunate occasion of getting stopped for speeding on the highways in Alabama, and he identified himself as a concealed license holder, and he also has a reciprocity license through the state of New Hampshire, which authorizes him to carry in Alabama. And the officer approached the vehicle, advised him of the nature of the stop, asked him about the gun. The member mentioned that he had the firearm. The officer said, "That's okay, where is it?" And he already knew that because he ran his driver's license. The information came back on the license check, according to the member. And the officer simply asked him to get out of the car, and they took the gun from him. He unloaded it and took it back to the car, wrote the ticket, came back up, and gave the member the ticket, and then commented on how clean the member's gun was, and gave it back to him, told him he could go on his way and load it at a later time. But there's an example where the notification resulted in, you know, somewhat of a positive encounter between the police and the civilians, and he wasn't offended in any way. And it can go all the way from that to, there is no requirement that the officer take the gun. Matter of fact, most of them won't take the gun. Even here in the state of Ohio, they'll just acknowledge that you have it. They'll tell them to keep your, or they'll tell you to keep your hand on the steering wheel in plain sight. They'll go back, write the citation, give it to you, you'll be on your way. But there are a number of ways the officers have a lot of discretion in how they can handle situations like that. So I just want you to know that it happens the right way most of the time, and the right way is not really defined in writing or in the law as far as how officers are going to respond each and every time. But ultimately, the individual that's law-abiding gets their gun back and they're going their way. I guess that's a positive encounter.
Let's go out to the phones and talk to KW in Dayton, who has a question for us. KW, welcome to the show.
Hey, good day. I've got a Florida driver's license. It's commercial, and I have Ohio license plates on my vehicle. I was wondering, what's the status there? Do I go by the Ohio law all the time, the Florida law all the time?
Wait, you're talking about driver's license?
Yeah, I have a commercial driver's license.
Okay, are you a resident of the state of Ohio?
About 5 months of the year.
Well,
six, seven.
What's your official residence?
Florida. That's where I live most of the time.
Okay, well, I'll tell you this, and this is simply a law enforcement perspective. You're kind of operating on the fringe of the law, because technically, by true letter of the law, the state that you are legally resident in is where you must have your driver's license and your vehicle registered. okay? Sure. And if you're a resident in the state of Ohio, you're required to have a driver's license, unless this issue of temporary residency versus permanent residency, you're kind of right on the fence, because 5 months, 7 months, 6 months, 7 months, 6 months, I don't know how they would deal with that. And ultimately, unfortunately for you, this is my opinion, it may be a court of law that will decide your fate versus you kind of controlling your own destiny. And that's, it's just one of those things are, it's out there. I'm not going to say it's gray, because if you live in the state of Ohio and this is your state of residence and you have a vehicle registered in the state of Ohio, your driver's license should correspond with that.
I have a Florida commercial driver's license, so I drive all over the United States.
Okay, are you an over-the-road transport person? Okay. Well, that may or may not make a difference, but again, it comes down to the state that you're a resident of. And that's, you know, I heard you say 5 months, so that means you're 7 months in Ohio and 5 months in Florida? Is that
how? Well, more time in Florida than Ohio.
Okay. Well, again, I really can't say. The law simply states that if you're a resident of the state of Ohio, you're required to have an Ohio driver's license, and your car must be registered. And the exceptions are people like that are in the military that are temporarily assigned here, or students who are here going to a university or college in the state of Ohio from outside the area. But when you're an over-the-road trucker, unless there's some other extenuating circumstance, you're still going to be bound by the residency requirement as far as driver's license goes.
Yes, but with the commercial license, am I also not allowed to carry a firearm in the commercial vehicle?
No, that's not the case, although there is a lot of rumor about that. There is a good article, or actually a video, on the NRA News website where NRA Deputy General Counsel Stephan Tomasevi has really laid that out pretty well. There's a lot of rumor that there is a restriction on carrying in a commercial vehicle, and that's simply not the case. There's no federal restriction. There may be some state restrictions in some places, but there's not that I'm aware of in Ohio. What normally happens, though, is that companies that have commercial vehicles make a company policy that says their drivers can't carry. If that's the case, then that's a completely separate issue between the driver and the employer. But there's no federal regulation that prohibits carrying a commercial vehicle.
Well, one other issue that could potentially come into play here is if you have a Ohio concealed holder's permit and a Florida driver's license, when you give both forms of identification to the law enforcement officer, he's immediately going to be skeptical about what's going on here, because you have the permit from Ohio but a driver's license issued in Florida, and then your plates are registered in Ohio, and it's going to create at least some confusion that's ultimately going to probably delay you.
Well, you said you had a CDL from Florida but a regular driver's license from Ohio?
No, license plates on a vehicle.
Oh, I see. Okay, it's plated in Ohio.
Yeah, I'm just telling you, from a law enforcement perspective, you're creating a significant dilemma for a police officer out on the street. And the bad thing for you is you're traveling interstate, and it could inconvenience you out in the middle of Tennessee at 2:00 in the morning. And what I would recommend you do is get a hold of the Bureau of Motor Vehicles. Just call the State Bureau of Motor Vehicles and let them know your situation. And I think they're going to advise you to transfer that license to the state of Ohio to get continuity with your registration. I could be wrong on that, but that would be my gut feeling. But they would be the authority in that area.
Why not transfer the plates to a Florida?
Yeah, that would be the other alternative. And if you did that and then you had Florida plates, you'd get the Florida license and your Florida concealed carry license.
Yeah, good. Thanks for your time.
Thanks very much for calling the show. We're at the bottom of the hour, so we'll be going shortly into the news. When we come back, we'll be talking to Ed and Bill and Michelle, and your calls will be taking at 457-1290. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.
God bless America. This is your blood brother, Ted Nugent, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro in for Shooting from the Hip. We'd welcome you to the show. Give us a call at 457-1290 if you have a question about firearms and firearms training or concealed carry or any other firearms-related issue. We'd love to have you on the show with us today. And let's go right out to the phones and talk to Michelle in Miamisburg, who has a question about shotgun training. Michelle, welcome to the show.
My 13-year-old son is taking shotgun for his 4-H project. He would like to eventually hunt with this gun, but we have no idea where to start as far as buying. What do we buy for him? Where do we buy it?
Well, before you even get into buying, what I'm going to recommend you do is get a hold of an individual who's going to be able to give you a lot of good information. Okay?
Okay.
You have a pencil and paper handy?
Yes.
Okay, I want you to call the Middletown Sportsman Club.
Okay.
Our friends down there do a real good job, and the person I want you to get a hold of is Tim Stewart.
Okay.
Last name is S-T-U-A-R-T.
Okay.
And the number is 513-422-5112.
Okay.
And I want you to tell him that you got that information from the people at Sim Trainer. Last summer, they ran a very successful program for youth beginning shotgun.
And they do
a great job getting people acclimated to shotguns. And before you even think about buying any equipment, any guns, any shells, you really need to get a hold of them and see if they're going to run that program again and see if you can get him into that program. And I think they provided the shotguns, and all you had to do is buy the shells. So that's not a big deal, and it's going to be a minimal investment up front, and then ultimately you'll have a long-term investment because you'll get the right thing for his particular liking.
Okay,
and
great.
And the other thing I want you to do is look at the Ohio Department of Natural Resources website and look for their hunter safety program.
Oh.
They offer those year-round, and they're typically more prominent, though, in the late summer or the fall going into the hunting season.
Okay.
But that's a great class because it gives them all the training. Matter of fact, the young kids are required to take that before they go out hunting, and it's just a great acclimation program for them to be exposed to all the issues they need to, and it's just the Ohio Department of Natural Resources Hunter Safety Program.
Now, the Hunter Safety Program is not a firearms training class at all, so that would be for the other aspects of getting ready to go hunting, understanding what the Ohio regulations are. There are some gun safety issues that they cover, but it's not really teaching you how to use the firearm, and that's the guys down to the Middletown Sportsman's Club will be probably the best in the area to talk to about that.
Great. Well, I appreciate it.
Welcome. Thank you for calling the show.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go out and talk to Ed in Dayton, who has a question or follow-up on this what went on in Kettering. Ed, welcome to the show.
Yeah, I glad you have filled me in on that particular incident because I was confused. One thing I thought I heard you say that anytime you're near a policeman, you're supposed to notify him you have a concealed weapon, whether or not there's an incident.
Well, that's not exactly what he said. It's any time that you deal with law enforcement in the performance of their law enforcement duties. So, I mean, if you're just passing by someone on the street, you know, that's not the same thing as if someone comes to you and either it's a traffic stop or investigating an accident or there's a call of a disturbance and the police are performing their duty. At that point, anytime you have an official interaction, then you need to provide that notification.
Oh, okay. I'm glad you cleared that up because I wasn't sure about that. And the guy mentioned he was on his own land. Does that have any effect on any of that?
No.
Well, it doesn't have any effect because the police were called to that location on the report of a disturbance. So it doesn't matter if he's on private property or in public property. The fact was the police were called there legitimately, or even if they weren't called and the police were investigating what they thought was a criminal act going on and they approached that individual, the obligation is to notify that they're a concealed carry permit holder and they're carrying. Now, here's the other thing to remember. You're not required to notify if you're not carrying. Just because you have the license doesn't mean you have to notify. It's only if you are in possession of a firearm at that time and a licensee.
On the other hand, let me just add one other thing to that, and that is that if you do not have a firearm with you, although you're not legally required to, particularly in the case of a traffic stop, it will show up on their when they run a check on your license, that'll show that you do have a license. And if you haven't told them that you have a license but you don't have the firearm with you, that's just going to raise the stress level and say, okay, now how come this guy didn't tell me he had a license? And even though it's not required, there's no legal requirement that you notify if you don't have a firearm, still a pretty good idea. And I recommend that. We teach that in our class. That's probably a good idea. And for that matter, anybody that drives your car probably needs to know that as well, because it is tied to the registration of the vehicle as well as your driver's license. So if the vehicle gets pulled over and stopped, and the person who's sitting there doesn't realize that you have a license, my wife, for example, knew I had a license but didn't realize what that meant and how it was tied to the driver's license. She got pulled over one time, and she did not provide notification, and it was a rookie cop, and so it got kind of interesting, but it was all worked out just fine in the end. It would have probably defused the situation a little bit if she had notified up front. So that's what we kind of recommend that you do.
appreciate the clarification. I always practice discretion is a better part of valor anyhow, so thanks for the clarification on that.
Okay, thanks very much for calling the show, and let's go talk to Bill in Dayton. Bill has a question for us. Bill, are you there?
Yes.
Okay, what is your question? Welcome to the show.
Yeah, I'm an avid listener of you guys. I listen every weekend. And I've yet to hear any kind of policy related to CCW license and working at the airport. I work at the airport out in the parking lots, and I was wondering if it would be okay if I had a concealed carry weapon license and kept it in my vehicle and brought it to work with me, and that way I had it when I left.
Well, I'm going to direct you to the head of your employer, whoever that might be, but I'm just going to tell you up front that if you're anywhere on the property of the airport, it's going to be prohibited. That's going to pretty much be the standard. If you're talking about on the airport property itself?
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's going to be prohibited through the private posting of signs and or airport policy. But I'm going to direct you to your employer because there could be two potential issues here. It could be your employer and the property where you park your vehicle, which might be separate entities in and of themselves. So I'm going to direct you to get a clarification from them as to their specific prohibitions.
In this case, it would not be a legal prohibition. I mean, there's no Ohio law that prohibits having the handgun in your vehicle on airport property as long as you don't go in a building. The buildings are definitely off limits, and they're all quite clearly posted. But the question that Jeff is addressing, and I think that's the one that you need to seriously address with your employer, is do they have a problem with you having a firearm on their premises? And that becomes more of an employment issue, not so much of a legal issue, unless you've been provided notice, and then in that case you could be considered having violated their own policy and could be considered trespassing. So that's why it's important that you speak with your employer and the owner of that particular, or the whoever's responsible for that property, that place where you park and you work.
All right. Well, I appreciate you guys being on the air and giving us all this valuable info.
Bill, thanks so much for being a listener of the show.
You know, that last question that Bill had was, it's an interesting question. I know it comes up often. And like Mark said, there's a difference between absolute legal restriction and then an issue where employers decide to have policy restricting it in their physical structure or on their premises. And that comes up quite often. But I want to encourage people, just for the sake of avoiding embarrassment and just so they don't have the hassle of having to go through that, make sure they get that clarified before they take it upon themselves to just do it.
Now, one of the things that did change in Ohio law with the change that went into effect in September of 2008 is that it's no longer a criminal offense if you have a handgun in your vehicle and it's parked in, locked in the vehicle, it's parked in a parking lot, but the parking lot is posted as having no weapons or no handguns permitted. It's no longer a criminal trespass. At that point, it's only a civil issue. But if you're an employee of that place and it's been posted as having no handguns, then you do have a question that could cause you a problem with your employer. So it's important that you understand that you deal with those issues and answer the questions before there's a problem. Go ahead, Jeff.
Let me mention one more thing. The problem I have with that is the city of Cleveland, for example, has decided to shun the state law and say that they're still going to prohibit people from carrying guns in parks and places like that. And the problem for civilians is they're going to be the ones that are kind of left out there kind of high and dry, and because certain jurisdictions decide to just not obey the law, and
right,
that's problematic.
And that's a completely different situation, and there's a lawsuit we'll talk about in a little bit about that. You're listening to Shooting from the Hip. We're going to take our last break of the hour. So this is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.
I want to welcome our listeners back to this broadcast of Shooting from the Hip. And a couple things that I want to remind you of. If you have any other questions, you want to call in and get on the air today, call us at 457-1290. That's 457-1290. Also, if you've been listening to the show today, you've heard a couple of commercials for Crossbreed holsters. I want to remind our listeners that we are now an authorized dealer of that product. And just this past weekend, the first shipment of holsters arrived. About a third of those are already committed due to pre-order. However, there are a variety of additional holsters available, and they work pretty much on a custom-made order-only agenda. So if you want to get in and get yours ordered, they're producing them as quick as they can. And we just got a little bit over a dozen in stock. So we might have one to fit your gun. If not, we'll get your order in and get you on the list. So I want to encourage you to go to crossbreedholsters.com and look at the particular models they have available. See if there's something that you're interested in and come in and get it ordered at SimTrainer, and we'll get it for you as quick as we can.
Yeah, that's an advantage, by the way, for the most people in the country don't have anybody that they can go to and just buy a Crossbreed holster. It's a 3 to 4 week production time for those from the time you place an order. So if we've got one for the gun that you have, then you're going to be able to beat the crowd on being able to get one. And they're very popular. A lot of people are moving to the inside the waistband style holster, and this is an excellent one. So come on down and take a look.
I have to tell you, looking at the first batch that came in, they're very high quality. And myself, I wasn't a big proponent of inside the waistband holsters for many years. And all of a sudden, this a new concept came about, and I think it's the solution to some of the problems that resulted in me not being a big fan, because I'm moving that direction now. And I want to encourage you to come down, take a peek, and see if that's something that you're interested in. One final thing I want to mention here is that our concealed carry class still has a few slots open for the class that begins on Monday, this following Monday. In a couple days, it runs from 5:30 to 9:30, Monday through Thursday. And I want to remind our listeners that the value of taking your concealed carry training at SimTrainer is that the emphasis of our course is on the serious responsibility of owning, carrying, and potentially using a gun in self-defense. And along or to meet those that end, we have an instructor that comes in. He's an attorney that comes in and spends 4 hours addressing many of the issues that many of our callers call in on Saturdays, and does a very good job of thoroughly understanding or delivering explanations of the law. And the nice thing about that is you might leave there scratching your head, not really liking what he says, but at least you know why and what the law is, and you can put yourself in a situation where you're going to make a determination how you're going to do things. We cover certainly all the regular mandated stuff. We have a course of fire that is very structured, and you leave there competent, because we recognize the fact that you could get your permit anywhere from 7 to 30 days after taking the training, and you could be involved in an incident. So we want you to be prepared mentally, physically, and emotionally for situations like that, and we go to great lengths to get you to that point.
That is kind of the focus of our class, by the way, is the moral, legal, and ethical issues associated with carrying a firearm for personal defense. And we do kind of expect that you already know how to handle your firearm safely, even though we do cover the basics on that. That is not the principal focus of our class. So if you're interested in getting your license to carry a concealed handgun, this is a great opportunity, because most of the time, since probably the middle of 2008, all of our classes have been pretty much full. So it's unusual for us to be this close to the beginning of a class and still have some slots left. So call the range at 293-3914 and you can get registered for that class. Let's go right out to the phones and talk to Rob in Dayton, who has a question for us. Rob, welcome to the show.
Rob, are you there?
Okay, well, maybe we'll catch him in just a bit. We have also coming up at the beginning of next month, the First Shots program. And we've been running quite a few First Shots classes throughout the last several months. We have a special deal going on with one of the companies in the area that we'll talk about perhaps another week. We've run about 100 people from that company through First Shots over the last 6 weeks or so. And so that gives us an opportunity to do some things with them, some company activities that they're just getting ready to start from. So we've had a lot of folks coming through that class, and we're going to have a lot more of those classes also we'd run them at least once a month, so we'll start one in the beginning of next month as well.
I want to remind our listeners, the National Shooting Sports Foundation oversees the First Shots program, and we've been very fortunate. They've given us an award for our outstanding participation in that program, bringing new shooters to the shooting sports. And they just contracted with a company to do some research on beginning shooters. What are their motivations? What do they do when they follow up, or what's the follow up? And what they're trying to do is get a firm hold of what's going on in the shooting sports. And we're obviously going to participate with them, and it's going to be on a voluntary basis. But one of the things we've been trying to do for a long time at SimTrainer, it's kind of the under underlying theme of everything that we do there is to promote the shooting sports. Not only is it fun and educational, but there's a lot of opportunities for individuals to get involved. It can be just coming and getting the basic class like first shots and getting your initial exposure to firearms. It could be getting your concealed holder's license. It could be for shooting recreationally and developing your skills in that particular area. It could be for basic training, advanced training. Matter of fact, Mark and I are getting ready when we leave the show here. We've got the Handgun One beginning the second set of the year of our advanced handgun training series. So there are a lot of opportunities at SimTrainer for you to get involved.
Just before we went to the last break, Jeff mentioned something about what's going on like in Cleveland and some of the other places where even though you may be legally right, you might still get some, you might still end up getting hassled in ways that are inappropriate. The Buckeye Firearms Association has filed a lawsuit to stop the city of Cleveland from prosecuting law-abiding gun owners under local ordinances, which were preempted in 2007. So I'd recommend that if you're interested in that and if you're a gun owner or you ever hope to be, then you ought to be interested in that. Go out to the Buckeye Firearms Association website at buckeyefirearms.org. There's also a link at the bottom of our page at sim-trainer.com. And we'll have a specific link in when I put the show notes up that will take you directly to the page talking about the Buckeye Firearms Association lawsuit and how you can get involved and how you can help in that as well. Let's go out to the phones and talk to Charlene, who has a question. Charlene, welcome to the show.
Hi. Hello?
Yeah,
hello, go ahead.
Welcome to the show.
Okay, my question is, if a person carried a gun, like a little handgun in a holster, and without a license, with, you know, where it's out, it's not concealed.
Okay.
Do you still have to have a license for a concealed weapon if it's not concealed?
If you're in a vehicle, you do. That's just one of the anomalies of Ohio law. You can't have a firearm in a vehicle. Now, you live in kind of rural area?
Yeah.
And see, and that's not the same thing as you would find in some of the more urban areas. I suspect in some of the more rural areas in this state, people are not going to be as alarmed by seeing a firearm carried in the open. And frankly, I think that's a good thing that people are starting to get a little bit less anxious about such things. So you probably would not run into a problem, but you would have to completely unload that firearm if you get into a vehicle.
Okay, and then just leave it lay out on a seat, something like that?
No, I'd recommend that you get a case and carry a case with you because leaving it out on the seat's going to draw attention, especially if law enforcement or just a citizen pulls up next to you. So get yourself a case, unload it, make sure the ammunition's in its original container, separate from the gun, not in the magazine, and then transport it wherever you're going, and then you can do whatever you have to do when you get to that second location, provided it's in an area, like Mark said, where you're not going to draw unnecessary attention to yourself.
Okay. All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks for calling the show. We are about out of time. There's the music. So if you have other questions, you can email us at radio@sim-trainer.com. You can go to our website, sim-trainer.com/radio, sign up for the podcast, and join our Facebook fan page. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.